Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and we're back for part two with the most charismatic human being in California, Nomad, also known as Michael Rapole. And this, if you like part one, this will be really good as well. So, man, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's a beautiful Saturday early afternoon here in sunny SoCal. And I couldn't ask for anything more. I'm talking to a brother of mine, you, and having a great time, man. After this interview, I'm going to literally go into my studio and reorganize some of my guitars. I have a bunch of guitars that are in stands on the ground, my electric collection, and I'm going to hang them on the wall today. So because I have my whole acoustic collection hung on two walls, so in a corner kind of space. So now I'm going to take the electrics and hang them on one wall on the other side of the studio, and that's going to give me more real estate in the within the studio. Guess what I'm going to do with that extra space on the ground?
Put your pedal boards.
Oh, bam! Because in the garage, I have four pedal boards set up, and I'm going to build two new ones. So now I have lofty goals. I don't know, Craig, and all the other listeners out there. I'm sure there's a lot of us that can identify with this. Sometimes my goals are way too lofty. I try to squeeze in too much into one day. Yeah. And then I get frustrated with myself. So I want to hang the guitars and build pedal boards today. The reality of that happening, not going to happen.
Not so much, man.
Yeah. So maybe I'll hang guitars today and build pedal boards tomorrow. And the reason why is because you have to understand also, as a professional musician, to have a weekend off is very rare. So this whole weekend I have off, and my wife is running some errands today and doing some things. So I kind of have some like me time today.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to squeeze in a bunch of, you know.
That's cool, man. Well, yeah, I'm the same way. I always write down too much, but I'm okay with that. Now, I used to frustrate me. I'm kind of, as you get old, man, it's really weird. You get a lot, you don't know, you're a lot more, for me anyway, I become forgiving with my, you know, understanding.
Yes.
Like good is good enough. You know, like this is my to-do list for the weekend. Am I going to get all this done? No, but if I get like 2/3 or even half of it done, I'll be thrilled.
You know? You go.
Yeah, it's like...
See? My lists look just like that. I love it.
It's like 20 things. You know, if I get 12 or 10, I'll be really happy. So I hear you, man.
That's awesome.
All right, man. So this is the therapy part of the interview, man. Let's dig it.
Ooh,
what is your best childhood memory?
Wow. What a way to start a session.
I know. How about this? Play an E chord.
What's that?
Play an E chord. Is that easier?
That's funny.
You had a pretty rich childhood, though.
Yeah, my best childhood memory, it's going to have to be plural, but it's a reoccurring memory. Mm-hmm. It's when my father would take me to Focus 2 Guitars in Commack, New York, on Jericho Turnpike. Now, I don't know if they're still there today. Actually, I'm going to look it up right now. It was called Focus 2 Guitars. It was a little guitar shop. When he would take me for my regular weekly lessons, that's like one of my favorite childhood memories. And I would go in for a half hour or an hour, I don't remember, and he would wait in the store, and he would hang out and talk to all the guys in the store and just have a good old time knowing that his son was in the little private practice room, getting all this knowledge, and then he would come out and, all right, so what'd you learn, man? Let's go home. I want you to show me. So we get home, and he's like, show me what you learned, and then he was just so elated with it. You know, he was... so supportive, and that's that reoccurring memory. And then to continue off that, after I graduated, so to speak, from those kind of, you know, brick and mortar guitar store teacher guys, I started getting private teachers to come to the house, and he would pay more for that. And those were private lessons that were at least an hour. And my favorite guitar teacher ever, his name is Steve Preziosi. He's an attorney now in Manhattan.
Wow.
Yeah, very successful attorney. And he and I have been trying to link up again. I'm going to have to try to hit him up when I go to New York this holiday season. Anyway, he would come to the house and give me an hour lesson, and it was intense, bro. Like, we were studying, you know, Paganini, Nikolai Paganini, the violinist.
Holy crap.
We were studying Andre Segovia. We were studying music theory, intense music theory. We were studying, you know, Al Di Meola and Yngwie Malmsteen and George Benson and Wes Montgomery. I mean, we were studying some heavy cats. And those memories are my best childhood, you know, preteen and teen era memories.
It's funny because before we got on this call, I watched that video that you happened to send over on YouTube. And right. You could see the, like, you're really in a joyful space whenever you grab that guitar, man. It's really evident. That's nice. It's, you know, if you're watching someone like that and you're being entertained by somebody like that, that's really nice thing. That's a good energy that comes off of that.
Yeah. I have to say, I think hearing those words is very therapeutic and helpful. You were right, therapy. that reminds me that I just got to play more for myself every day. Because I don't think we do enough of that. As, again, quote unquote, my term that I'm coining, nobody can steal it, the career musician.
There you go.
As a career musician, we don't take enough time to play for ourselves. Whether everybody loves guitar, of course, so whether it's guitar, piano, voice, drums, whatever it is, whatever instrument, we don't take enough time to play for ourselves, man. That's the reason why we got into it in the first place. We didn't get into this business to make money. You got to be crazy if you think you're going to make money in the music business, especially nowadays. We got into this business because, first of all, it wasn't a business when we got in. It was a favorite pastime. And that's what we have to get back to. And I'm preaching to myself.
That's okay. Yeah. As long as you're listening.
Yeah, I am.
Something or someone you miss from your childhood.
Oh, okay. There's several people that I miss. Frankie Santoriello was a dear friend of my father's who was a heroin addict. And my dad helped rehabilitate him. And he lived with us for a while. And Frankie had a couple, Christians would call it backslides, or you know, therapists will call it relapses. And on one of the relapses, he OD'd.
Wow.
And I love Frankie to this day because he was the embodiment of what a musician, entertainer, artist is. He was so talented. He could sing and play any instrument and write. It wasn't about his musical prowess on any one instrument. It was about the message that he was delivering. So I miss him dearly. I miss Daryl Kunisch, who was my high school teacher in the performing arts high school that I went to in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Dillard High. Dillard High School of the Performing Arts. Daryl Kunisch, K-U-N-E-S-H. He passed away a handful of years ago from health complications. And he was an incredible source of knowledge for me, and one of my idols that I was just thinking about him the other day, driving down the road. Like, you know, I also miss Adam Dunn, D-U-N-N. He was the drummer in my very first rock band back on Long Island, New York. He passed away last year at 44 of a heart attack.
Crap.
And wow. These three people, although there's many, but these three people were very influential in my life, and they left. There's definitely a hole there.
Wow. And
those three things I miss. Those three people I miss. Things that I miss. I miss, because I live in LA now, I miss the seasons. I miss the cold.
There's no seasons there at all? It's just straight?
Well, right now we're getting an unusual We've had an unusual warm snap, hot spell here. So we're in the end of October, and it's still freaking 98 degrees. So,
oh, wow. That's hot.
Sometimes you go through that in L.A. Typically, this time of year, it's not that warm. Excuse me. But, yeah, I miss the change of seasons in New York growing up. And speaking of childhood and everything that you're talking about, those are the best memories, man. When I was living in New York with my family, and you know, my days were filled with playing guitar and rehearsing with my band. I was a Gestapo, make no mistake. Remember, I was always the band leader.
Yeah.
I was always conducting rehearsals and yelling at everybody. But we had such a great time. So,
what's most important thing your dad taught you?
To believe. Faith. If you believe it and you continue to speak it and you continue to do the actions necessary to bring it to fruition, it'll happen. He taught me that.
Did that happen with him in his career as an artist?
No. And I think that's why it really, manifested with me and my brothers, because he was determined to make sure that he imparted that wisdom to us so that he could see us succeed in the areas that perhaps he didn't.
Do you think did he not practice that enough, or did he?
He practiced it for sure. He's an idea man, which I'm an idea man as well, and so are my brothers. The problem is when you're an idea person, you get so many ideas, sometimes it's hard to just focus on one or two
execution
of them. Yeah, and everything that I'm studying now with all my favorite speakers and teachers on YouTube and different podcasts, they're like, look, ideas are great. They mean nothing. And I've always felt this, especially for the past 10 years, I've really been hell-bent on living this. Ideas are worthless by themselves. You need that execution. I've been listening to Gary Vaynerchuk.
Vaynerchuk, yeah.
Lately, I like him. He's a tech guy, and you know, he said it just this morning when I was working out. I was listening to him, and he said, look, everybody has ideas. He was giving a little speech at a conference. He said, if we all sat in this room, the 300 of us in the room, we all sat down and started collecting our ideas and putting them in an outline, we would solve half the world's problems, literally. The problem is you can't execute them all.
No, no way.
It's virtually impossible. And, you know, so an idea without execution is nothing. And, you know, and he used Uber as an example. He said before Uber, there was Magic Cab, but Magic Cab couldn't execute it the way Uber did. So who became successful?
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
I listen to, it's funny, I sometimes listen to podcasts in the gym. I tend to listen to podcasts more when I'm like walking the dog, because sometimes in the gym I need a little bit of. I'm older than you, so I need a little more juice. So today I was listening to George Harrison, actually. I haven't listened to that in a long time.
Oh, I love that.
He's such an interesting guitar player because he was versatile. Like, you know, all of a sudden you'll be listening to something and you'll have some country licks. And it's like,
yes,
that's odd, you know, like, yes. And then like the song before, he's got a slide going, you know, he's just so versatile. And I think that it's probably because his personality was so low-key. I mean, I think guitar people know what a good player he was, but I think by and large, you know, people will know, the general population will know Slash is a great guitar player, not so much George Harrison. You know, the guitar people do, but yeah, it's just, I think it was...
Because everything about culture, our modern culture, is sensationalism. And unless you have a marketing and publicity scheme built around an idea or a product or a talent, it's going to go unknown. It's going to go unrecognized.
Well, I don't think he gave a shit about making money probably either, George Harrison, because he didn't need any money.
Well, that's number one.
So he didn't have to market. You know, marketing was like, why would I waste time and money during that? I'd rather just make more music.
Right. Well, if you're independently wealthy, number one, first of all, that's what separates everyone from everybody else. So, I mean, there's that. But again, because he was so low key and soft spoken and didn't need to be John or Paul, he just didn't, you know, he was happy being George.
Yeah.
And boy, I've dreamed of being that guitar player in a band very difficult to find the right chemistry. Not to say that I've really tried, because I haven't. I've only been in a handful of bands throughout my career. Literally one hand I can count them on, and it doesn't even take up all fingers. So.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, man. I love George. And my solo album that I released, Nomad Volume 1, Sky, you could hear all my George Harrison influences. And what's funny is that I believe Eddie was my biggest influencer, because he's the reason why I started playing Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
But when I actually write and record and produce my music, you can hear more George Harrison, because later on in life, I got hip to George. You know, like, you know how when you're younger, you just don't like coffee. But then all of a sudden, I was in my late 20s, and I started, well, I'll try some Starbucks and with all the sweetener shit in it, you know. But then I was like, wait a minute, let me see what this coffee thing is all about. And a producer named Keith Thomas, a very amazing producer in Nashville, dear friend, said, yeah, man, you should try drinking coffee black, because you're really tasting the beans themselves, yeah, you know, the brew of it. And so I did, and I was like, yeah, I don't like it. So for years, I used creamer. And then all of a sudden, my trainer, a year or two ago, was like, dude, lose the creamer and you'll lose like 60 to 80 calories a day.
Yeah.
You just don't eat. You know?
Yeah.
So you see that metamorphosis,
yeah,
that take place? It's the same thing with musical tastes,
yeah,
right?
I think so.
You know, you start with Slash or Eddie, and then the older you get, you're like, holy crap, listen to that Elton John song. It has the best guitar parts in it ever.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's very true.
When you were 25, you were like, Elton John song, forget that, dude. I'm listening to fucking Van Halen, you know?
That is true, man. Hey, how about your mom? What's the most important thing she taught you?
She's amazing. She taught me how to love, you know, and how to be compassionate, because she's very compassionate and very loving. And she taught me how to be sensitive, because, you know, a lot of times we have our heads so far up our own asses that we don't even know what's going on around us. And we forget that, you know, we're all humans and we all have struggles and trials and tribulations. So you got to be sensitive to what other people might be going through. Mm. You know, she taught me all those things.
That's great, man.
Yeah, she's the Italian side and my dad's the Cuban side. Funny enough, they both have tempers, but in very different incarnations. My dad is extremely reserved and soft-spoken until you push him over the edge, then he'll blow up. But my mom wears her heart on her sleeve. So here's the bad news, Craig. I got both. So
yeah,
I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I could be soft-spoken until you push me. But then when you push me, I'll blow up. But it doesn't take much to push me.
That'll work itself out, I promise you.
Yeah, I'm cognizant of it. I'm working on it daily.
So. Yeah, that'll work itself out, man. Awareness is the first step. That's what we say in therapy.
Amen. Amen to that.
What's your non-musical superpower, Nomad? Actually, hold on a minute. What would you say your musical superpower is?
My musical superpower, I believe, that's a pretty narcissistic thing to even say.
It is, but I know you're not going to look at it like that. Why would I call you into a session over somebody else? Or why would I say, man, we need Nomad in our project?
I know exactly what a song or a riff or a composition or a production needs. I could just hear it and be like, okay, this is how we can tweak this to make it sound even better. Hmm. And whether it's adding or, you know, playing a guitar part or not, whether it is some other production element or compositional element, I can assess that fairly quickly and correct it. And I can find a hook. Because for me, look, don't get me wrong, all the listeners out there who love very advanced forms of music, I love bebop. I love jazz. I love cool jazz. I love avant-garde jazz. I love fusion, jazz fusion. I love flamenco. I love all these very, very extreme, you know, forms of music. But at the end of the day, I also love pop music. I love a good pop hook. And I believe that when you create a reoccurring theme and you place it in such a way within the composition that is strategic to the listener to capture their attention on a repeated basis, then you're winning, because now you've actually hooked them into your song and they're listening. So I believe I do have an ability to create hooks in everything I do. And that's important. Now, we call them hooks now, a pop hook, or actually in the game, we call it top line. People are writing top line lyrics, or even if you're a top line musician, that means you just come up with a really hooky part. That's not a new concept. It's called themes and variations in music theory over the course of the centuries before. And the idea is you build a theme and you expound upon it. And that theme has variations, but it's recognizable to the ear, even to the most layman ear, the layman's ear, you know. So there you have that.
Yeah, I was surprised you didn't say your diversity, because to me, I mean, you're very adept at so many different instruments. I mean, you're not like, you know, most guitar players are very good guitar players, you know, and then they need to pick up a mandolin, they could manage, you know, then you have an odd utility guy, but you're like beyond that. You're like proficient in like pretty much all these different kinds of instruments and different roles. So that probably helps you immensely, I would imagine, in creating hooks, because you're not thinking in one language, so to speak. You're probably thinking in, you know, you have more thoughts going through your head than the average guy because you've done more.
Well, actually, you know, I appreciate that, Craig, and I will say this, that I believe that analogy you just drew with language is so true. So I'm speaking in French, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, German, Japanese, you know, simultaneously with all the different instruments and different textures and different genres and subsets of genres. So yes, that is 100% true. What I learned, though, is that because music is truly, I'm not going to say the only, but one of the very few unique universal languages.
Yeah.
It's a little easier, but you have to be aware of it. So you have to think to yourself, well, if I'm in Japan and playing a song, there's no difference than if I'm in Germany and playing a song. The same elements that are going to create interest and excitement or different emotions within the listener, they're identical no matter where you are. The only difference is the vernacular in which you choose to deliver them in.
Oh, okay. So you'll use a different, not a media, but you'll use a different instrument in this case, perhaps.
Yeah, so if you're using a pipa, which is a Chinese mandolin, and I played the pipa, P-I-P-A, I played that on Kung Fu Panda. If you're playing the Chinese pipa, or if you're playing the flamenco Spanish guitar, look, the concept is the same. The medium and the method of what you use to get there is different, obviously, but the concept is the same.
Interesting. That's
and,
really cool.
And there was a very infamous, if you will, guitar player named Tommy Tedesco.
From the Wrecking Crew. Yeah,
the Wrecking Crew. But he was one of the original session guitar players, true session guitar players of L.A., you know, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And that guy was amazing, and he taught me, because I read his book, which I'm gonna reread it. I have it in the studio. I'm gonna dig it up. And I had his video years ago, and he said, "Look, play everything, be versatile, listen to these different styles of music, so you can kind of pick up on their vernacular and how they treat the musical grammar, if it were, you know, how they deliver a sentence, how they punctuate it musically." And then fake it, emulate it. I say fake it, but he's, you know, but he said fake it. He was, oh boy, you think I'm a handful. He was a handful. He was a trip. That guy was a ham. He's a good old Italian, you know, but so cool, man. He's like, just fake it. Just listen to it. You can kind of get the idea of what they're going for. Now implement it into what you're doing. And then, you know, one of the students in the clinic video would say, yeah, but Tommy, what about all the different tunes? He said, fuck the tunings. You tune everything like a guitar. I don't care if you're playing a mandolin, you're playing a Russian balalaika, you're playing a Brazilian cavaquinho, you're playing an ukulele, you're playing an eight-string ukulele. I don't care what you're playing, a charango from South America. Tune it like a guitar. That way, you just took out, you removed one of the biggest stumbling blocks between being able to communicate in all these different elements or not. So do you want to go to a John Williams session? Because he was scoring, you know, he was in sessions with John Williams every week. Do you want to go to a session with John Williams or Ennio Morricone and sit there and say, well, sorry, Mr. Composer, I'm not, you know, as adept on the mandolin or the cavaquinho as I am as the acoustic guitar. No. When he says to you, hey, Tommy, can you play the Brazilian cavaquinho? It's like, of course I can. I spent 6 months down in Brazil hanging out with the hot babes on the beach strumming my cavaquinho. Come on. Meanwhile, he didn't even know what a cavaquinho was.
Right.
So he'd leave the studio. He'd go to his buddy's music shop. Hey, I need a cavaquinho. What is it? Oh, yeah, it's a Brazilian ukulele. Here it is. Great. Give it to me. Next day, he brings the cavaquinho in. John Williams says, oh, my gosh, Tommy, what am I going to do? I can't live without you. You're amazing. Everything I ask you to do, you do.
Right.
So now you're becoming that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
To everybody in town. So your versatility, it truly is paying off. Mm. But you got to live it. You can't. This is not for the faint of heart. You can't be like, I think I can do it.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I've heard this pretty much consistently with the guys who've been, you know, in the business for a long time, that you got to be diverse, and that's going to make you more money. It's going to make you more valuable. And,
yes.
You know, actually I had a conversation with a drummer, a guy I grew up with yesterday, and he was telling me the same thing. All right. What's your non-musical superpower now, man?
I think I'm a good icebreaker. I can go into any room and develop conversations, and not only isolated conversations. I have an ability to include everybody within the, you know, as they say, the 3-yard radius. You know, if you're standing within 3 yards of somebody and you don't say hello, shame on you, because that's another human being. And, you know, humans, we interact. That's why, first of all, that's why we were created, to continue to procreate. You can't procreate without interacting. Doesn't mean you're going to go strip everybody on that you meet. No, I'm just saying that's the foundation of interaction is talking to one another and acknowledging one another's presence. And for all you listeners out there who disagree with me, please write me an email. Please DM me on Instagram or Twitter and challenge me. I would love it, because I think you're full of shit. You need to talk to people. Communication is key.
Yeah.
And I think I'm a good communicator. Now, am I always the most effective communicator? Possibly not. Am I always evolving as a communicator? Absolutely. So, but I think I have the ability to communicate in multiple scenarios and, you know, just bring people together. For instance, I was at a Halloween party last night. It was about 8 people divided into tiny little factions within the corners of this little radius that we were in. I always go around and just start involving everybody. So I'm talking to you and say, Craig, oh, yeah, so we're talking about this movie that James Franco was in the other day. And then I'll start the conversation with you, and then I look to the person next to you and say, right, and then did you realize that he was actually dating such and such while I was filming? And then to finish the sentence, I turn to the next person and say, so isn't that a trip that blah, 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 blah? And then I turn back over here to the other side of the room and I say, so I know you work in the industry. So now I just involved 4 people in a conversation, 4 new people in a conversation that I was having with one person, with you. So it's connecting those dots and making everybody feel like they're a part.
Yeah.
It's so much better. I get tired of hearing myself talk. Sorry. That's the irony, because that's all I'm doing on this podcast.
Oh, my God. What time is it? Is it too early to have a drink? Okay. What's your biggest business or personal win?
Biggest business or personal win?
Yeah.
Well, my biggest personal win is you know, having my daughter, Nina, and I'm so blessed and grateful. And, you know, for those listeners out there who don't have children yet or don't plan to have children or, you know, maybe have missed the window to have children, it's hard to understand, and I know it might sound cheesy, but all of us who have had children, when you say it, that your child is the biggest accomplishment, biggest blessing, biggest source of joy, it truly is. And this, and you can't really put words on it. That's why we write songs about it, you know. So I wrote when my precious little angel was born. She was born 3 months prematurely, so she truly is my miracle baby. And
she was born just at the point where they have 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Because she was in an NICU for a certain amount of time.
She was in the NICU for a good couple weeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she NICU for, sorry, almost, she was probably in the NICU for about a month and a half, almost 2 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
The incubator was really intense.
Mm.
But thank God. I mean, she's amazing. And, you know, I wrote a song about her called One Happy Day. And it's just, it's one happy day in the course of however many you get. But that one happy day, you could relive it over and over every time you look in their eyes or every time you have a thought of them, you know. So that's my biggest personal.
The song you wrote that I like, what was it called?
Hi.
Hi. What did you write that about? That's such a beautiful song.
That's about a mistress. That's about being seduced by a mistress, the power of sensuality and sex and infatuism and all that.
Because the song is very, it's melancholy.
Yes.
It's a melancholy song. So was that experience that you were having in your head, was that a melancholy experience? Did it, like, you know, it seemed good, but it was all bad? without naming names or time frames.
It's not like you're getting personal, Craig.
You could say let's pass on that. That's totally cool, man.
We'll pass on that. It was okay. An intense moment in my life.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool, man.
But my biggest musical win, that's all right. My biggest musical win, is, I mean, and this might sound cheesy too, and please don't take me as a disingenuous person, because I'm not, listeners out there. My biggest musical win is the fact that I am very fortunate to wake up every day and say, wow, how am I going to create opportunities while making music today?
Totally get
that's,
that.
To me, that's, it's an ongoing thing. Again, I can't pinpoint it to one situation or one experience, because there's so many, and that's the joy of what makes this journey of life, right? Because it's not a destination, it's a journey, right?
Totally, man. Yeah, I hear that a lot from a lot of guys as well, you know, getting the opportunity to play music and getting paid for it, and especially a guy like you's been doing it for so many years, and it's like really cool.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Last night we hosted a little dinner party, and we played two songs for our guests. We didn't get paid for that. Why did we play? Because we love it.
Hmm.
So we don't, it's not, you know, it's not the money. And that's what I always try to impart into everybody. You know, you don't play because of the money. The money is just a bonus, you know. But
well, I mean, there's a time and a place, no, for everything. I mean, clearly, you know, if a movie producer said, hey, man, I need you to score this commercial for me because I know you love playing bazooki, and it's we need a bazooki in there. You wouldn't be like, oh, awesome, man. You know, you'd expect a contract. You know,
yeah. Well, that's a business transaction,
right?
So yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, you're absolutely right. But I mean, I'm just trying to, you know, express the fact that not everything is financially related. But I find the older I get, too, the less I worry about money, the less of an issue it becomes.
Yeah, yeah. Right, right. Yeah, no, no.
It's
yeah, totally. 100%. Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
So. Do you have any hobbies outside of music?
Oh, man. And here's the thing, bro. I should.
And well, I mean, fitness. I know you work out.
Yeah, I'm mad at you right now for calling me out on this. Yeah, yeah. So I love working out. Fitness has definitely become one of my newest hobbies. I love playing pool, although I suck at it, billiards.
Oh, that's cool.
Because I don't play enough. I love doing leather craft work. My dad used to do leather craft work when I was a kid. He got me into it, but I haven't done it in years. I've always wanted to learn how to scuba dive. That's on my bucket list. My dad was an amazing scuba diver, mm-hmm. and I never did it, and I really want to. So those are some of my interests. So I need to make time for scuba and leather craft although I don't want to be harmful to animals. So maybe it'll be synthetic leather craft. I don't know. Anyway. another hobby that I've always wanted to, I love design. I'm not necessarily interested in, I love architecture, but I wouldn't want to be an architect, but I would want to be a designer. And I'm not going to say interior, exterior, because I think it's all connected. Mm. I love textures. So when I go to a really cool restaurant or hotel, I'm kind of weird. You'll see me literally touching the walls and touching the different elements, because true designers understand that textures are so, I mean, they're inviting, and they can even be sensual or just, you know, they just really suck you in. So what, like, in other words, if you see a smoothly finished concrete wall that was not, it's just concrete and it's meant for structure. But I stayed in a hotel in Brooklyn this past summer, and all the walls were bare concrete. So number one, it saved the builder the materials,
sure,
for finishing the walls, and it saved the labor. But then they just polished the concrete walls. Oh my gosh, it looks and feels amazing. It's incredible, you know? So just textures like that. So that's a design thing. So yeah, those are some of the things I'm interested in.
All right, man. So here's a new question I came up with today. I'm always trying to, like, you know, and you're like the perfect person to test it out on. Tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or would find a little odd.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's a good question, I think.
Surprised to hear
or find a little odd. Yeah. Odd. Keep it like not above X-rated.
man, surprised to hear. I might have to ponder this one, Craig. Surprised to hear or find a little odd.
Yeah.
Oh, I love cooking, so I guess I should have mentioned that for one of my hobbies. But that's not surprising or odd. I cook Italian and Cuban food very well, by the way. I learned Italian from my mom and Cuban from my pops. So,
dude, you're a perfect husband.
Yeah. Oh, I love. Okay, this is interesting. I love washing dishes.
Wow, and that's a wife, trip.
Like, we have the deal. Whoever cooks,
so you cook and wash.
Well, no. Here's the deal in our house. Whoever cooks, the opposite person washes.
Okay.
So my wife cooks on the majority. You know, she cooks majority of the time.
Wow.
Every day. And then I cook, like, the special dinners, you know. But when I cook, she cleans. And when she cooks every night, I clean.
Oh, that's cool, and man.
I don't mind it. Like, it's therapeutic for me. I love the water on my hands. And I love the
bubbles.
Yeah, I love the bubbles. I love the soap. And I love the process of scrubbing something dirty to make it clean.
Yeah.
And then using it again the next day and making it dirty again, but making it clean. It's like, holy cow, this is a neat concept.
Yeah, that's a little odd. That was a great answer. Bing, bing, correct.
Because look, I think about it like this, and you know me, I always got to give illustrations. Sorry.
No, it's totally good.
Think about it like this. If you took all the dishes that you use on a daily basis and let them pile up in the sink, it's disgusting. It's a raunchy pile of dirty dishes. Mm. You can't use them again. If you use them again, you will take the chance of seriously getting sick, right? You know, because there's bacteria and all this stuff. You cannot use those dishes again. They are off the market.
Yeah.
Until Mr. Nomad comes in and scrubs them clean.
Scrubs them clean. There you go.
Then you can use them again. Think about that, bro. There's so many parallel analogies that we can draw from that.
We use paper plates, man. It's just...
You just squashed my...
Sorry. You know, our enthusiasms are not shared on that particular thing. That's all. Like, I just...
And here's the deal. We have a dishwasher.
Well, I was wondering that, to be very honest with you. Wondering that. I was like, man, it's 2017 here in Tampa. Is it not 2017 in LA? I was thinking that, but I'm glad you said that. But I didn't want to say it because I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, because maybe that was another odd thing, which, you know, we don't own a dishwasher. All right. Favorite place you've traveled? You've been all over the world, man. That's really a nice thing.
I was just in Milan a couple weeks ago. I love Italy. I love Spain. I love Europe because of the architecture and design elements.
Oh, yeah. It's some beautiful.
And the culture. It's just so rich. You can go, you know, if you go from Ireland to Scotland, which are just neighboring countries and both part of the UK, there's so much cultural differences between the two. And you think, oh, what's the difference? They're all the same. No. Yeah. There's so many cultural differences. And they're right. They're neighbors. Here, if you go from California to Arizona, it's all the same. There's no cultural.
Well, California to Florida, across the country, is the same.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, then you go from the UK to Spain, and you're in a whole different dimension.
Yeah.
Then you go from Spain to Italy, and you're in a whole different dimension. And from Italy, you make your way back up through northern, you know, Eastern Europe, and you're in a whole different dimension. What?
Yeah.
That doesn't exist in America. So I would have to say Europe. But I love traveling to all these different places. I've been to Africa many times. I've been to a lot of countries in Asia, a lot of countries in Africa. I have not been to Australia yet. I'm going to Japan. By the time this episode airs, I'll have already come back from Japan.
Have you been there before? I thought you were in Japan.
Yeah, I've been to Japan a bunch. You know, I love Japan.
Is the food? Is the food like? This is probably a real typical ignorant American question. Is the food like sushi there, or?
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. Yes, they do have sushi, but they have so many other different variations of food, like yakitori, and I can't think off the top of my head right now, but they have the ramen noodle bowls. You know, the yakitori is more of a barbecue thing. Nobu, which is where they put everything in this big giant bowl in the center of the table, and everybody has a little plate filled with vegetables and meats, and they put it in the bowl. We put it all in the bowl together communally, and then you pull yours out and you eat it.
Wow, not for OCD people at all, is it?
That's called shabu shabu. So, you know, that's so delicious, man.
It sounds great.
That's what I'm talking about, man. When you go to these different countries, there's so much culture. What is the food culture of America? Burgers and fries. Come on, people.
You know, that's one of the things I really loved about growing up in the city is being exposed to all those cultures from every, you know, whether it's talking to somebody, listening to their holidays, going to a particular kind of restaurant. I found that was a real big benefit to me.
Yes. Amen to that. Yes.
Yeah. Questions are tough. Anything you're currently trying to improve on? Could be musically, personal, business. I know you're a big guy in self-improvement. I like you because of that. You know, I like you for a lot of things, Nomad, but that's one. I like that you're not content with today, and you know, you're a type A and you're driven and you want to be better, because you know, I think that you're always if you're not evolving, you know, you're like fucking dead, kind of, you know?
That's right. Thank you for that. And thank you for noticing and acknowledging. And yes, I could always be better. I'm not going to speak for anyone else. I could always be better. One of the things, it feeds into what I just said. We could always be better. Well, it's not my job to make sure my wife is better.
Correct.
It's my job to make sure I'm better.
Correct.
So that's the number one thing that I want to work on, is not trying to make others better, but trying to focus just on myself, make myself better.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two, in the process of trying to make myself better, it's not so much as trying as you lose the word try and you implement the word develop and act, right? And commit, those type of vocabulary words. Commit, act, develop, persevere. You know, these are the words that I use to just say, hey, every day is a new day, but even more so, every moment is a new moment. So try to capitalize on that moment and for the purpose of improving yourself. So yeah, that's my goal. And how do I do it? Lately I've been getting into some meditation, very simple, basic, just breathing meditation. Where you just sit and breathe for 5 minutes. I downloaded an app for it, ironically, that I saw on Shark Tank. Really cool. Because you and I talked about this, I need an outside source to force me to sit down and focus for 5 minutes.
Well, sometimes it just makes easier if there's like, even if your accountability is to an app, fine.
Right, exactly.
Because
you know, we always seek accountability, right? So I love that you brought that word up.
Yeah.
And with accountability, most of the time than not, you need a partner. Well, how many times have I said to my training buddy or my trainer, you know, hey man, we're going to hold each other accountable. I'm going to text you every day, no matter if I'm in Japan or wherever you are or wherever, we're going to text you. Yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's not, because it's not realistic, because we're not married. We're not connected.
Yeah.
So for him or me to text one another, to put that kind of responsibility on ourselves is kind of silly, because it's like, first of all, we're grown men. Second of all, that act of saying, oh, I got to take 5 minutes to text, you know, so-and-so, tell them what I ate and what I trained today. Yeah, it's a cool concept, but I think we all need to own that accountability aspect for ourselves. And if an app can keep you, you know, honest, then
why not? Yeah, let it be an app.
Exactly.
What the hell is it? Doesn't matter, man. It's not like you're shooting heroin to keep yourself honest, you know.
Amen.
What the hell? Amen. Yeah, yeah.
It's artificial intelligence to help keep you on track. But so what?
Yeah,
it's still for the betterment of you.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh, totally. I think it's nothing wrong with that at all. If you can go back in time and do one thing differently, either in your business or personal life, what would that one thing be?
This is very personal, and I would have. It's a tricky one, because I don't want to say I would have divorced sooner, because I wouldn't have my beautiful daughter, but I would have figured out a way to deal with my first marriage better.
How long were you married for?
I was married for 14 years.
We were together.
We were together on and off for 18.
That's a long time.
It just didn't work out. And, you know, you learn a lot. You learn a lot. So, and I will never speak negatively of her, because that's not the point. The point is, we made a beautiful child together, and now we just have to continue moving on into the future and raising our daughter as the best we can.
Good for you. Yeah, I got out of my first marriage at 7 years.
Yeah,
it was, we had a 7-year contract. I did not re-up.
Yeah.
Toughest decision you ever had to make, and maybe that was it, or the hardest thing you ever had to do.
Yeah, that it's all related. It's all that. Yeah.
Who's had the biggest influence on your life?
Aside from my father, his words of wisdom. Please, listeners, please don't take this as uber narcissism, but myself. Because I draw inspiration from so many different sources. If I were to write a list, it would take me 3 hours or more. So the inspiration doesn't come from one place.
Hmm.
It comes from it's a ongoing accumulation of sources. So it's culminating together to a head. And the reason why I say myself is because I'm in charge of that.
Yeah.
I drive that ship.
Yeah.
So I'm the first captain of that airplane that says, okay, well, where are we heading today for inspiration? Well, we're going to land over here, but we're only going to be there for a few minutes, because then we're going to take off and head over here. So that, in my opinion, that's it.
I wasn't somebody who had that level of awareness as a kid. I was very much on autopilot. And I didn't realize until later that we are in command of our own ship.
Yeah.
Were you always like that? Or like, did something trigger it? And you don't have to tell me what that trigger was, but did something trigger it? Or like, did you just get sick and tired of being on auto? Like, that's what happened with me. I just got like, I always prided myself on having some level of awareness, and once I reached a certain point of time and I started getting that awareness of, well, you know, I'm aware of my environment. You know, it was one thing about New York City. You, you grew up in the Bronx, you have to be you have to be aware of your environment, you know?
Dude.
And
that's it.
And so I was always very grateful for that, because that awareness serves in many other ways. But I didn't have that awareness you're just talking about, that you're running your own ship, until later. And I wish I had, desperately wish I had had it earlier. That's a regret. A regret in the sense that I couldn't control that. I don't, or maybe I could have, I don't know. But, you know, you always look back and say, if you had this, you'd be different. You know, things would have been easier, or I do anyway. And so I'm curious, did you always have this, or this is part of your own, you know, personal evolution?
Yeah, I developed it over time, and one of the first areas that really, one of the first incidents that really helped me develop is when I dropped out of college, and I realized, all right, well, if I'm going to drop out of college, I got to show my folks that I can earn a living, you know, supporting myself doing this, and that made me 100% responsible for my own actions. Mm. I could lay in bed and sleep till noon. Or I could get my ass up and do my morning routine and start practicing and start making phone calls. That's when you learn you're the commander of your own ship. Yeah. Like, we're all, my dad always said, you know, we're all dealt the same hand. And it's, now, I understand people have extenuating circumstances. Don't get me wrong. You know, some people may not grow up with parents. Some people have parents who maybe passed away at an early age. I get it.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, we're all humans, so we're all dealt with the same deck of cards in an operating system. In other words, we all have, you know, again, aside from
extremes,
but we all have the same brain capacity and functionality. It's what you choose to do with those tools that's
right.
What's important. And when people say, oh my gosh, you're so versatile on the guitar, yeah, because I just chose to be. I just studied everything because I loved everything.
Yeah, right. It's not magic. You didn't just suddenly wake up one day and say, "Wow, you know what? I'm good at flamenco today." Holy shit! Wow, it's amazing though that people don't understand that. Like, you know, the first time I spoke to you, I said, "Man," I think I said to you, "I said, holy shit, I cannot imagine." That's like the first thing I said to you. I can't imagine the amount of time you've spent woodshedding, because I watched a couple of your videos and it was like, boom, you know, this thing. And I was like, you know, I think that's literally the first thing I said to you. I've watched your videos and I cannot imagine how much time you spent woodshedding to perform at the skill level that you're doing on so many different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, it doesn't just happen. It's like, you know, it's not like fucking Cracker Jacks. Today, you know, here's your fortune. Today you'll be good at metal. Oh, wow. You know, you know, it only happens from, and I only know this a little bit because, you know, as a writer writing ad copy and stuff, and I know that any kind of creative passion is like, it just doesn't happen, you know? And mine was business, mine was developed for business specifically, not for pleasure, but the amount of time you take to do that is amazing.
Right. Yeah. So, well, thank you. But, what was the original
question? The original question was the awareness thing. So you said you got it really when you left college.
When I dropped out of college, and that's a decision that I regret today. I wish I wouldn't have done that. But my father was so supportive and so adamant about the fact that we are who we make ourselves to be. Mm-hmm. He said, well, if that's what you believe, you don't need it. Just go do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But he always told me, he said, you better learn how to read music and you better learn how to play everything.
We have one question left.
And go ahead.
And it's, what's your definition of happiness?
Watching my daughter grow up and experience things. And the other night we went to a show. We took her. My wife is amazing. She found tickets to American Ninja Warrior. It's one of our favorite shows to watch as a family.
Yeah.
And she got us tickets to a live taping here in LA. And we went.
Very cool.
And just to watch the sheer joy on my daughter's face as she's watching this, and she got to take pictures with some of her favorite athletes, you know, competitors, and That's the definition. I mean, you know, that on a personal note, that's the definition of that. If you're just speaking musically, the definition of, you know, your happy place, quote unquote, my happy place is just when you're in that creative zone, whether it's in the studio composing or producing a song or writing a song or on stage performing, it's that Zen moment where you just, it's an outer body experience and you are not responsible for the things that are coming out of your musical, you know, being. You're tapped into another source.
Well, cool, man. Hey, I can't thank you enough for being you and for your time. Work and people could find you on, let's tell them, facebook.com, Nomad and Lola, right?
Yeah, that's our duo with my wife. That's our duo band. Yep, Nomad and Lola. And then everything else is Nomad's Place. Nomad with an S, Nomad's Place. So it's nomadsplace.com is the website. And all of the socials are at Nomad's Place or / Nomad's Place.
So check him out on YouTube. Check him out on SoundCloud because all his stuff there. And you, where can people get your album, Sky?
That's not available any longer. I'm working on revamping everything. So hopefully by the time this interview comes out, all my stuff will be revamped and everything will be available properly. But yeah, just keep in touch with me and with all the Nomad's Place handles and all of that will be revealed as time goes on. I'm hoping just to be, you know, in the streaming game as well here in the next few months. So streaming is where it's at now, you know?
Totally. See, the difference between you and me as a marketer, as soon as you said it's not available anymore, I'm thinking, great, we make like 20 limited editions available for like 500 each. And you're like, oh, no, we'll be trying to set it up on streaming. I put my marketing hat on right away. But anyway.
I love it. And that's why you can help me develop a plan for that.
Listen.
Well, you could spearhead it and then you'll take a commission.
Everybody, thanks so much for listening. Man, you're awesome. You know, we're going to be friends for a while, so we'll have some more time to talk. But thank you for doing this interview. I really appreciate it. You're cool as hell. And I think everybody's going to appreciate your sincerity and your good sense of humor and your good nature and your being so open. So check out Nomad online. It's Nomad's Place is all his handles. If you know, you could also look up Michael Ripoll, Ripoll, and that was Nomad 1.0, and now he's Nomad 2.0. So, all right, man. Thank you for spending time. I really appreciate it. Everybody, go to Everyone Loves Guitar. Sign up to get notified about future episodes, along with some other cool stuff for guitars. Be nice. Go play your guitar and have some fun. Till next time, peace and love, and I am out. Thank you, brother.
Awesome. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.